This is OTB AM.
Let's tell you something about Nathan now. I think he said the other night, I was listening to his commentary, actually, I got the first half of his commentary the other night. Great reader of a stat, he's just not a great reader of the game. And that's not something that I thought about. I was thinking it when I was driving. I was thinking, he's a great man for a stat, but, oh, come on.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Neil Tracy, there is plenty to get into this morning in the tight five. I take it we're starting with Ireland against France.
Yeah, we will, Owen. Obviously, there's been a lot of coverage of it since. And unfortunately, the coverage hasn't been too good because it was a pretty bad performance by Ireland. There were a lot of really, really basic mistakes and simple errors. And look, I know there is the argument of professionalism, and there is the argument that there is a gulf in class between the likes of England and France, and then the step down to Ireland and Italy, and then a further step to Wales and Scotland. But unfortunately, and as like Fiona Steed mentioned last night on last night's Monday Night Rugby and Off the Ball, as much as the gulf is there, Ireland made the gulf look a lot bigger on Saturday with some of the mistakes they made in the first half. So we're going to look at two series of the game here, which is actually leading up to both the first and the second French tries. The first one we're going to look at is an example of some poor Irish defending. And then afterwards, we're going to look at some poor Irish attack that actually led up to a French try as well. So what we're going to look at here is it's just so passive, and there's a lack of organisation and clarity as to what's happening. So the first picture we're looking at here, this is a scrum, 13 and a half minutes gone. As you can see there, it's France 5, Ireland 3 at this stage. France had just scored the try. This is the view of the, this is a replay of the try. This is just a view from behind, so we can kind of get a better picture of what's going on. And what we need to look at is on the left side of our screen, it's the way Ireland's set up, because the scrum is obviously 20 metres in from the touchline. So it's leaving a sizable enough blind side and a very inviting blind side for France to attack. So what Ireland have obviously decided here is that they are quite wary of France trying to get a nudge down the blind side of the pitch, breaking down the blind side and having a 2-on-1 in what is a fairly large open space. So what Ireland have done is they've taken a big chance and they have moved Hannah Tyrrell, as you can see, who's circled in the red. And also just off screen where I have that red arrow, Bavien Parsons is obviously out there as well. So Ireland are actually doubling up in defence. They're putting 2-on-1, two defenders to one attacker on that blind side. But what they're doing then is they're leaving themselves one short out on the open side. Now, I think in a lot of cases, what a lot of teams might be doing, if they're wary of this, I would say anyway, Hannah Tyrrell is probably committing too much to that blind side. What you're going to see a lot in rugby is when teams are kind of just a little bit wary and unsure as to where to go, what they might do is position the out half for that first, you know, that first tackler directly behind the scrum. So that depending on where the scrum goes, okay, is it moving down towards the blind side? Okay, I can go out here and cover there. Is it clearly turning out towards the open side? Well, I can shift across and all our defenders can move across as well. But if we move on to our next clip here. So this is the scrum itself, what we're actually just going to look at. I just wanted to give you an idea of where the scrum is on the pitch, where the gain line is, and just how France are going to move this up and just tilt it up on the open side. And if we move on to our next clip, we can see exactly what happens. So basically, France get a small little nudge up on the loose side of the scrum, on the left side of the scrum. But what that does is it takes the Irish back row out of the equation a little bit. So as you can see, you have the arrow on the top of the screen. That is Claire Malloy, who's obviously, she's on the blind side. She has been, you know, she's removed from the action ever so slightly because of the way that shifts up. You have Dorothy Wall, who's the right circle. She's actually being held in, which is a little bit of clever, cynical play by her French counterpart. She just has her arm on her. She's just holding her in for half a second. And then you can see Kira Griffin at the back as well. And like Griffin, she has her head up out of the scrum at this stage. She knows it's moving. She knows it's coming towards the open side. And she's actually wary now at this stage. She needs to be able to break as quick as possible, because the longer this scrum goes on, the more she's going to be removed from the action and drifting out out away from the play. So she's wary of this happening. She's ready to break. So we'll move it on to our next slide. And what we see is, first of all, we're going to look at the black line. That is obviously, that's just the gain line. That's just a reference point for our next clips to come. But obviously, as we can see on the left side of our screen in the red circle, we have Hannah Tyrrell and Bavian Parsons. And then the yellow circle, that is just one French attacker. So obviously Ireland still have overcommitted to that blind side. And really what you want to be seeing, like, once that ball was clearly coming out towards the open side, you think Hannah Tyrrell and the Irish defence should have been pushing back outside, because France weren't going to be going down that blind option. Have to push out, create the, you know, get your numbers even again out on that side. But what we're going to do here is, since Ireland have kind of overcommitted on that side and you're leaving yourselves ever so slightly short, you're giving France an automatic overlap. What you're going to need to do in this situation is, obviously, you're defending narrowly, because you're defending more narrow, because you're going to have to bunch in. You're going to have to push up, and you're going to have a really, really quick line, because you need to rush them in attack. You need to make sure that they do not have much time to make decisions, and they're going to have to rush something. They're going to have to throw a pass at the last second, because if you give them time to just put the ball through the hands, that's where they find their overlap, and that's how they're going to go in. So if you move on to our next clip, we can see initially it starts out all right. Senan Apu and Eve Higgins have pushed up quite well. You can see Senan Apu is matched up with her opposite number, with the red line, yellow line. That's Eve Higgins matching up with her opposite number. Lauren Delaney is the blue line, matching up with her opposite number. And that's where you see the extra player. Now, the orange line, that's ultimately going to be matching up with Emer Considine, who is defending much deeper for Ireland, obviously covering full back. Off screen, you're going to have another French defender, which is where the overlap is. So what we can see here now is the three Irish defenders, they've moved up, they've rushed pretty much up towards the gain line. So it's kind of just beyond where the scrum has set. But what they're going to need to do here is, France have moved this out towards the centre already. They've already got two passes out. What Eve Higgins and Lauren Delaney, who are the two players with the black arrows, what they need to do is they need to take a chance. They need to shoot up and try to close off that space as quick as they can. Because if they hold back, if they just kind of hold their position and wait for France to come at them, you're just allowing France to run with the ball, move forward and put it through the hands and just use the overlap. Now, unfortunately, we're going to move on to our sixth clip. And we can see the point that Eve Higgins and Lauren Delaney, the point that they actually bite in and the point that France are passing, they're still just at that line of the gain line. So they once they got up there, they didn't push up any further. They didn't get up into the fresh faces or rush them or rush them into making a decision. And France have been able to just go through the hands and use the overlap that they have. And we're going to move it on again to our next clip. And we can see we're going behind the goal again, because we just need the space to see Emer Considine at this stage. She's ultimately in a really, really tricky situation, because she's been left 2-on-1 now. She's the last line of defence. And she's kind of been left with a situation where she has to decide, does she stick or twist? Does she bite in on the French player who's carrying the ball and just take the chance that, OK, I'm going to rush her into making a bad pass, I'm going to rush her into, you know, forcing the outside French attacker to dropping a ball? Or does she drift in defence? Does she mark up essentially with the French player who's on the outside and trust that Eve Higgins, who, as we can see with the red arrow, is covering back? So Emer Considine has a decision to make. Does she bite in and go for the and just try rush the French ball carrier into doing something stupid? Or does she trust her scramble defence to come back and make the tackle? Unfortunately, she kind of does neither, because as you can see, if we move it on to our last clip, she doesn't really step up at all. She's still just kind of hanging there waiting for the players to come onto them. Ultimately, Eve Higgins does actually get back and make the tackle. Considine hasn't moved out and it just leaves the overlap. It's passed outside and France run in. So there's a lot going on in that, and unfortunately not too much of it is good.
Well, she shouldn't maybe be in that position in the first place, but I guess it's going to happen every so often. So
there were a lot of mistakes made before Emer Considine had the decision whether to bite in or not. Like, from the setup where they're overcommitting on the blind side of the scrum to once the realization that the ball is going out on the open side, you need to get back outside. You need to, you know, you can't just wait for in the chance that they are going to take an unlikely option down the blind side. And also then as well, just how passive they were in defense, waiting for France to come to them rather than rushing them into a decision when you're giving up an overlap. You need to rush up and get in their faces really, really quick and force them into making a mistake.
It seems that they're the sort of things that you just need an in-game awareness of, like somebody on the blind side of the scrum to say, we're overloaded here, get over, sort of thing, or shunted midstream, basically, rather than a sort of prescriptive defensive plan. Like, that's the answer to that, right?
Yeah, like, it's the sort of stuff, unfortunately, that should be hammered into you as a fundamental, really. And it's something that... we've heard a lot about the amount of training camps that they've had over the last number of weeks. And, you know, these are the basics you should be expected when you are a team that's prepared as well. Unfortunately, I think mistakes like that don't necessarily come down to are you a professional or are you an amateur, is the harsh reality of it. And look, in the game of rugby as well, there's another, it's like Mike Tyson said about boxing, you know, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. Sometimes when you're out there in the thick of it and there have been a couple of big hits, France were rushing up in defence huge as well and making some big tackles. Sometimes subconsciously, when that is happening, you're almost a little bit reticent to kind of shoot up yourself because there's almost an intimidation there. There's a worry of... you're just ever so slightly hesitant to do it.
Yeah. Let's move on to the Ireland attack then, Neil.
Yeah, so this is a few minutes later, and unfortunately, this is an Ireland attack, and it's showing two things. First of all, how quick France were in defence, kind of in contrast to what we saw from Ireland there in the previous play, but also it's how static Ireland were in attack. So there were way too many ball carriers who weren't stepping onto the ball, who weren't running onto the ball or coming up to the gain line. They were catching the ball and then beginning to move forward. So what we're going to look at here is it's a series of five phases where Ireland unfortunately go from just outside the 22 to losing about 15 to 20 metres in the space of these five phases and ultimately coughing up the ball, which France kick down the pitch and score a try from. So this is leading up to the French second try. We're just going to start it here. And we're going to see where play is developing. It's after a good carry by Bavin Parsons. She's actually got a really, really good body position as well with the way she's placed the ball. She's giving herself a long body position. So that means the hindmost foot that the French players have to stay behind, that is further away from the ball, which actually is a very, very good thing to be doing. You want your body to be pointing back towards the try line when you're placing back that ball. So the X, we're just marking, that's the ball about to be passed. And the yellow arrow is Lindsay Peat, the Irish loosehead prop. And we're just going to, what I want you to do in a lot of these cases is keep an eye on where the red line is. Obviously, that's the gain line. And we're also going to look at where each Irish player is starting as they're being passed the ball and where they are when they receive the ball. So just take a note there of where Lindsay Peat is with the yellow arrow. And we move it on to our second clip. And as we can see, there's two red lines here. The red line on the right side, closer to the try line, that is where the Irish pass would have come from. That is where the last ruck was. But as we can see in this next red line, that's the part of the pitch where Lindsay Peat was tackled by a French player. So they're shooting right up, and Ireland are not they're not getting any dominance with their carries. They're not driving through, and they're being met. I make that probably about 4 yards behind the 4 yards behind the last ruck. So all the players that are coming back from that ruck, they're running backwards to get back into position. And when you keep going backwards, as we can see from the next clip, if we roll it on again, this is where the next ruck is being formed. We can see that's our red line, that's the gain line, that's the hindmost foot. And our yellow arrow on the left side of the screen, that's Hannah Tyrrell standing in it out half for Ireland. And unfortunately, the pass is going to come to her and she's not going to be moving up towards it. She's not going to be running onto the ball. It's standing and waiting for the ball to arrive into your hands before moving. But what's happening is the French players are moving up very, very quick and they're getting up in their faces. As we roll it on again to our next clip, we can see this is the point that Hannah Tyrrell takes the ball into her hands. And that's the gap between where the ball was coming from and where Ireland take possession of it at first receiver. You're going backwards about 5 yards. You know, you should be almost back up at the line at that stage if you're taking a little bit flatter. Now, as we can see, outside her, she has Ciara Griffin, who, in fairness to her, she's charging onto the ball. She's making a harder carry. But unfortunately, because she's starting from so much further back, if we roll it onto our next clip, number five, we can see that where she is tackled, again, they're behind the line of play. They're behind the gain line. And we just have two X's here on the screen. The top of those, that is where the first ruck started two phases ago. And this is where Ireland are after literally two phases of play. They've been driven back this far. You're probably talking 10 to 15 metres. There's more to come, unfortunately, as well. If we move on to number six, we can see how the ball is recycled again. This is actually, we're skipping on a phase. Sene Naipu went out towards the right, and now we're coming back out towards the left again. This time it's Claire Malloy standing as a first receiver, and we're just keeping an eye once again. The red line, that is the gain line, and we have Claire Malloy circled there. We just want to keep note of this is where she is standing as the ball is being passed, and unfortunately, again, it's standing still waiting for the ball to arrive. It's not running onto the ball. It's not stepping out onto it. And if we move on to, we're going on to number seven, we can see, yeah, this is the point that Claire Malloy has caught the ball. She's probably only a meter advanced from where she was standing when the ball was passed. But as we can see with the red lines, the French defence are shooting up. They're coming right up into her face. They're getting right in front of her and meeting her behind the gain line once again. We're going to move on to clip number eight. And we can see, in fairness, Claire Malloy, she manages to eke out an extra couple of yards out of it on the tackle because she is a very, very strong ball carrier. But this is probably the worst part of it. This is where it's really going to fall apart. We have two players circled there. The one closest to us on the near side, that's Dorothy Wall, flanker. Outside her, we have Lindsay Peat. And then outside her, on the left side, we have Emer Considine. So it's going to be those three players again. Keep an eye on that red line. That is the gain line. And if we skip on to number nine, we can see that Dorothy Wall, again, she's just caught the ball in the position that she was standing. It's not stepping onto it. France are just able to drift across and they're not really too worried. The red circle outside her, that's Lindsay Peat. And the blue circle outside Peat is Emer Considine. And if we skip on again, we can see Dorothy Wall at this stage, she has just passed the ball directly out to Lindsay Peat, who again is still standing in that same position. She hasn't advanced, they haven't advanced a yard at this stage, and they've already played two passes out towards the wing. And again, Lindsay Peat, we're going to run it on again. She's going to pass it out to Emer Considine. So Ireland have played three passes at this stage in this phase of play. And if you look at that black line, that is the gain line. They've passed the ball three times and they're arguably the guts of 10 metres behind the gain line. Like, there's nobody running onto the ball. There's nobody stepping onto it. You would expect if Ireland were to get three passes together, one after the other going out towards a wing, that they are getting up at the very least up towards the gain line, if not a little bit further. And what happens then is if we move it on to number 12, Emer Considine, she has a little bit of space. She's able to carry the ball. She gets tackled and held up, and the ball gets stripped out of her hands and kicked down the other end of the pitch. France score a try directly from it. But if we look at our two X's here, the X on the left, that is where the play is ultimately broken down. And the X on the right side of the screen, that is where play started five phases ago.
And a lot of work as well went into that, and tired bodies after a number of phases that actually
went
backwards.
It takes so much out of you as well when you are going backwards. That's the toughest part of it as well.
That was really good stuff on the Ireland game. We do want to move on because we've got about 8 minutes left here. Let's go on to the Super Rugby because there was something that really stuck out to you.
Yeah, this was a really fun try at the weekend, and I kind of feel like I'm at a kid's magic show at the moment, and I'm going to basically tell everyone that the rabbit was in the hat all this time, because I'm kind of being a bit of a stickler for the rules and a stickler for the law book here. On what was a brilliant, innovative try from, we're going to take it from the Highlanders against the Blues in Super Rugby Aotearoa at the weekend. So this was 5 minutes into the game. It was the Blues' opening try of the match, and unfortunately for them, the Highlanders ended up winning it. But this was just a fantastic bit of a try, and I just want to point out maybe a couple of irregularities in the way the laws were adapted in this one. So basically, we see our numbers, our yellow numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We see our red numbers, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's a five-man line out to the Highlanders, 5 metres from their own line in the early stages of this game. But what we are going to look at, first of all, Aaron Smith, Highlanders scrum half, is on the right. And we're also going to look at Jonathan Ruru, who is the Blues scrum half, or as we're just going to call him the receiver at the lineout, because teams will often change it up. They might put a forward in there, they might put a scrum half. He is a scrum half. He is standing in as the receiver. Now, officially what the receiver has to do is he has to stand 2 meters back from the lineout. He's not allowed to advance up to the line until either the ball is out of the lineout is over as such. So that point is basically, if a player goes up and catches the ball and pops it down, then the lineout is over. If a player catches it, brings it to ground, the lineout is still in play until basically he is on the ground and has released the ball. But the X on our screen, that is probably where Ruru should really be. He's already starting to creep up when the lineout is still in play. And it's going to be really, really crucial for the try. Because if we roll on to our next clip, we can see that, again, he's advancing. The ball has been thrown into the Highlanders. Their jumper is up there. He has his hands on the ball. But he has already joined the back of the lineout, pretty much. He's crept up onto the lineout. And then in the red, what we're going to look at is Aaron Smith, scrum half for the Highlanders, as we all know. But also, the other player circled out is the Highlanders' number 8, circled on the right side of the pitch. So what a lot of teams will try to do when they're pinned that close to their own line, they'll try to get the ball off the top, get a quick ball out towards a big, strong carrier like a number 8 who's standing out there and who's going to just try eke out maybe 3 or 4 yards, not even spectacular ground. But what it does is it just opens out the pitch for the possibility of a clearance kick, rather than trying to do it so close to the touchline where you're probably unlikely to gain too much ground if you're sending the ball into touch. What we're going to look at again is this is the point now where the lineout is pretty much over, because it's been brought down to ground and the Highlanders jumper, he's popping this ball straight out off the top now to Aaron Smith. But if we look at Ruru, who's standing right up on the gain line now at this stage, the yellow arrow above him, he has eyes only for Aaron Smith. He's obviously done his homework and he knows this is a tactic that a lot of teams are going to be trying to do. Get the ball out towards a hard carrier further out on the line, gain an extra few yards. But he's waiting and ready for this. He has his eyes firmly pinned on Aaron Smith and he just times it perfectly. Because you can see he's about to pass the ball. He's already made that sprint. He is darting. He is stepping up into that line. If we move it on to our next clip, we can see there he has made his move. He's going for it. And he just dives onto that ball. He gets his hands onto it. It was an unbelievable catch as well, because to say he caught it into his fingertips would be an understatement. And it was a bullet of a pass by Aaron Smith as well. It was a brilliant read. It was a brilliant catch. And I'm being a complete stickler here. I would honestly say that if the option of a challenge was available to the Blues in that case,
they probably would have
won it. Unfortunately, and it leads us into our next point, the Rainbow Cup and the trial laws that are going to come in. Mm. Unfortunately, even though the captain's challenge was available, the captain's challenge was available on the day, it wasn't available for that instance, because a captain's challenge, unfortunately, cannot be used for a line-out or a scrum. It can't be used at a set piece where they say there are, you know, so many of the laws are completely open to interpretation. So they want to eliminate all of that. But will we get into it now, the trial laws for the Rainbow Cup? So yeah, Rainbow Cup starting this weekend. We're going to be seeing 3 trial laws that have been used throughout Super Rugby Aotearoa and Super Rugby AU as well over the last few weeks. The first of those that we'll speak about is probably what we spoke about there, the captain's challenge. So it essentially gives, as well as the TMO still being functioning, it gives each captain the option of 1 challenge per game, although they can use it again if it's successful, like a timeout or something like that in the NFL. But during the first 75 minutes of the game, a captain's challenge can be used on a try decision or in a case of foul play. So they've got 20 seconds to make their call and say it to the referee if they want something to be looked at. That's in the first 75 minutes. But in the final 5 minutes of a game, a captain can use their challenge to challenge any decision that happens on a pitch aside from something at a scrum or a lineout. But it opens up a little bit of an anomaly and it creates a bit of an anti-climax, because something we would have seen just this past weekend between the Crusaders and the Chiefs in Super Rugby again, was that 79 minutes were on the clock. The Chiefs were either 1 or 2 points in front against the Crusaders. Crusaders had the ball down in Chiefs territory. They give away a penalty. And Scott Barrett, the Crusaders captain, went up to the referee and asked to use his captain's challenge. He could barely think of anything specific to challenge. He just wanted to say, like, it honest to God, it was just check that last ruck. See, was there anything we can get out of this that we might be able to get nick a penalty off?
So this is going to happen all the time.
Well, look, it's a very, very specific situation, but it did absolutely take the climax out of what had been a great game to that point. And like in the end, he just kind of took a guess and said, can you just check and see were there hands on the ground? Yeah. And, you know, the referee and the assistant referees and TMO look at it. It was a clear as day penalty to the Chiefs all afternoon long. Like, it was a simple decision. It just wasn't really in the spirit of the law, I would say. Now, there are a couple more laws as well to get through. The red card replacement. So this is pretty simple. It is, if a player is red carded, after 20 minutes, the team who had been red carded can bring on a replacement. The player who is red carded is gone for the game, but the team have the option. Well, I say the option. They're obviously going to do it. The team can bring on a replacement player after 20 minutes. Personally, I'm not really a fan of it. I think if you're going to be hard and clamp down on the dangerous play we've seen, you really need, like, you can't be leaving any wiggle room in it. And then the other one we have then as well is the goal line dropout. So this is if a try is held up, if a ball is knocked on over the try line or in the in-goal area, or if it is carried over the line and touched down, rather than a 5 meter scrum, which we would have seen, we're going to have a goal line dropout, similar to a 22 dropout, just taking place from the goal line. I've seen it a little bit in action. I'll be totally honest. I'm kind of not too pushed either way on it. I don't see what it has added. I don't see what it has taken away. It's probably one of those things you'd like to see developed out a little bit more. One thing I'm disappointed we aren't trialing out is the 50-22, which has been trialed in Australia, and it hasn't made an enormous difference, but it's when it has happened, you've kind of gone, oh, that was really nice.
Yeah.
You know, that was a lovely bit of skill. It hasn't taken away from the game or it hasn't added to it, but when it has worked out, you've kind of just gone, oh, that was lovely.
There's no harm in having it.
In the opening weeks, Rob Kearney put in a lovely kick down into the corner, wins his team a line out, and all of a sudden you're like, oh yeah, I like the idea of that. It isn't taking over a game.
Yeah.
It isn't changing the way teams are playing necessarily, but it's just I just found it to be a nice quirky addition.
Yeah, maybe one for next year. In general, Neil, are you buzzing for the Rainbow Cup? Are you curious? Where are the excitement levels at?
Kind of just general curiosity, I'll be totally honest, because I think, like, Leinster and Ulster over this weekend anyway, at least, their team selections are going to have one eye on their Champions Cup and Challenge Cup quarterfinal or semi-finals the following week. I think with Munster and Connacht, you're probably going to see a lot of development selections. I'd expect to see the likes of Kenya Knox and Roman Salanoa, for example, playing a lot for Munster over the next few weeks as they try to test out their options. It'll be great, obviously, to see Orji Snyman back from Munster in a couple of weeks' time. I do think, though, I wouldn't be too confident of an Irish team winning this simply because of the way their fixtures are going. They just have more difficult fixtures because the Irish teams are better. Take Connacht, for an example. Their three games, if all goes to plan and we do have the South African teams playing against the Irish and the Welsh and Scottish and Italian teams after the 3 weeks, like, Connacht's first three games of this competition are against Ulster, Munster and Leinster. It's broken up country by country. Edinburgh played Glasgow three times instead. Mm. Like, I know what the three tougher games are in that. Zebra played Benetton three times. I know what the three toughest games are in that run. If you're looking at, you know, if you're looking at Connacht or Ulster or Munster or Leinster, they certainly have tougher games than the other teams. That's why you could kind of see maybe Irish teams taking points off each other. And it probably mean, like, if I was to be guessing, I don't think an Irish team is going to be winning it.
Yeah, I think it's a fair prediction. Neil Tracy, great stuff. That was the Tide 5. And thanks a million for being with us this morning as well.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.